Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. There have been 21 murders in the District of Columbia so far this year. This time last year, there were 13. That's a 62% increase over last year. Nearly all of the homicides this year and last were committed by guns. What can be done about that? Political leaders are trying to address the rising homicide rate and prosecuting those convicted of the crimes. Well, tonight, we're talking to D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine about that. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Carl, thanks for coming in. I appreciate
it. Good to see you, Harold.
Is this a crisis?
I think we are in a crisis, and you just recited the numbers for January of this year. Of course, last year also saw an increase year over year, 40% increase. And so it's going to really require a comprehensive approach.
What in your mind defines a crisis as it relates to homicides in the district? Because we aren't seeing the numbers of the so-called Dodge City, the bad old days of the crack epidemic.
No, you're exactly right. So back in the 80s and 90s, when we were, you know, considered to be the murder capital of the country, you saw murders exceed 400, 500. And of course, those numbers have gone down precipitously over the last decade, which is good. But I think responsible elected leaders don't want to stay around 100, 120 murders a year. What we're looking to do is really bring that down below 100 in a way that is sustainable. That's why I'm calling for comprehensive approach and also innovative approaches. I'm really excited to talk about Cure the Streets.
And I do want to get to Cure the Streets, as a matter of fact. The thing I do want to first talk about is the announcement that Mayor Bowser made this week in having some of these gun cases moved from the D.C. Superior Court to the federal court, having the U.S. Attorney's Office prosecute them. Why?
Well, it's a great question, and I think we should start by just making clear that everybody understands the way prosecutions go in the District of Columbia. So the United States Attorney's Office, that's the federal prosecutors in D.C., generally prosecute all felonies in the District of Columbia, with the exception of a few that are prosecuted by my office, the Office of Attorney General. So a good way to look at this is that the U.S. Attorney's Office prosecutes adult crime. The Office of Attorney General prosecutes juveniles. The United States Attorney made the decision, and of course the Bowser administration agrees with the U.S. Attorney's Office decision, to move more gun cases away from the Superior Court, that's our local court, over to the federal court. The rationale, as I understand it from the U.S. Attorney's Office, is that the federal courts essentially will provide greater sentences to repeat gun violence offenders.
When you say greater sentences, elaborate on that for me.
Sure. Well, under the federal system, of course, there are the federal sentencing guidelines, and there are also federal offenses that apply to felons who are arrested and charged with having a gun in possession or committing a crime with a gun. Generally speaking, those federal sentences provide for more strenuous punishment, longer sentences than D.C. offenses that are brought in D.C. Superior Court.
Why is that?
It's an interesting question. What it is that the Congress passes the federal laws, and as we know, Congress tends to have just stiffer sentences than the D.C. Council. Now, I think this is a really important issue, and it's one that clearly raises the issue of statehood and autonomy. The council is the appropriate body because it was elected by D.C. residents and really, I think, has the best sense of what the residents of the District of Columbia believe is the appropriate sentencing dynamic for D.C. offenses. The fact is, though, however, that the U.S. Attorney's Office, the federal prosecutors, can elect to prosecute either in Superior Court, local, or go federal. Here, they're going federal because they think that there'll be more deterrence given the fact that the sentences will be longer.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking with D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine about law and order and the homicide rate here in the District of Columbia. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As always, we will take as many phone calls as we can. Keisha, calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind, Keisha? Keisha, are you there? Keisha, give me a call back. She's gone. Have her call me back, please. You just mentioned it as it relates to issues regarding statehood. Someone might argue that if the district cannot handle its own problem and that the federal courts are now handling this, that is really an anti-statehood argument. What would you say to that?
You know, I'm certainly sensitive to that kind of concern. And I have to tell you that my experience with the Superior Court as well as the D.C. Court of Appeals, those are our local courts, is that those judges, are amongst the best in the country. And I do believe that those courts are able to handle those offenses. We're just in an unusual situation where we have a federal prosecutor who can exercise her discretion as to where to bring the cases. And the thought process there is that the cases would have a greater likelihood of success in terms of making a conviction and would have more stringent punishment.
As I'm sure you read the article in the Washington Post that suggested that the real reason behind this is to take the load off of the Superior Court. How do you respond to that?
You know, there are a couple things going on, to be sure, with the Superior Court. The court is working extremely hard, notwithstanding the fact that there are at least 9 vacancies that remain open on Superior Court, which means that our system where the local judicial nomination commission sends names to the president, and then the president picks a name and then sends it to the Senate, isn't working. There have been some delays on the part of the White House. But the real culprit here is the Republican Senate. They have not appointed judges to the D.C. Superior Court. I should add that the D.C. Court of Appeals is also down 2 judges. So there are strains on the court. However, I still believe that the court, our local court, is an outstanding court and can handle these criminal cases.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine about law and order issues here in the District of Columbia. Let's go back to the phone lines. Keisha, are you there?
I am there. Can you hear me now?
I most certainly can. Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Okay. So I was calling in response to the fact that they're moving the sentencing and the cases to federal court versus keeping them within D.C. And I'm really disappointed in that. My question for Attorney Racine is, can they not increase the sentences through D.C. courts versus having it leave and go to the federal court? And my concern is that we won't get it back, in addition to what it means for us in terms of statehood.
It's a good point, Keisha, and thank you for your question. And yes, the answer is the D.C. Council certainly has the authority to pass legislation that would have stiffer penalties. Let me challenge the thought, though, because the point is that we cannot, I don't think, prosecute our way or sentence our way out of the problem of crime. And this is why I'm excited about an innovative approach that we launched about 6 months ago in the District of Columbia called Cure the Streets, where we're actually employing people who are credible in their community to go into the tough neighborhoods and actually engage those individuals, many of whom are causing harm, and try it as best they can to, number one, talk them out of committing crime. Number two, connect them to the kinds of services and opportunities that would have them put those guns down. And number three, help those communities become more emboldened around the concept that murders are not normal. We need to normalize peace, not normalize violence.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because there was a report this week or last week that there were more than 25 individuals as part of this program who were given jobs or opportunities as an alternative to violent crime. It's my understanding that these people were perhaps people that you thought may have been at risk of committing crimes. Is that correct?
So there's several things going on with the city. And the city, and I have to also credit Mayor Bowser for looking at this more comprehensively. There is a jobs program called Pathways that seeks to identify folks who, you know, have criminal records, folks who have caused harm in the past, but who are prepared to be disciplined and be rigorous and show up for training that could lead to jobs. That's very important. The Cure the Streets program is a different program that I'm sure we're going to get to.
We are. I need to take a break, and I want to let Terrence from D.C. know that we are also going to be speaking with him. So please, Terrence, stay with us. Also, lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We will be taking your calls even after 7:30. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. And don't forget, you will be able to hear the entire podcast of this conversation on WHUR.com a little bit after 9 o'clock tonight. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. What can be done about D.C.'s rising homicide rate? What are the ideas and innovations to address the issue of gun crimes in the district? We're talking to D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine about that. We're also talking to you, the listener. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to our conversation, Mr. Racine, let me talk to Terrence, calling from the district. Terrence, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is this law. Who is it going to affect? Is it going to affect black males or white males? To me, it's going to affect black males and just another tool to lock a black man up. What is this?
Please go right ahead. And I think he's talking about the moving of these cases to the federal court for longer sentences, which is a very valid question.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Terrence, for your comment. And, you know, look, many voices have been heard in regards to, you know, this change in forum of prosecution. And you're right. The days of mass incarceration, predominantly African Americans, the longer sentences, you know, is something that we have to, aware of and try as best we can to avoid backsliding on that. That's why, again, the point is that you cannot prosecute your way out of these problems. You've got to be creative. And that's why we're championing the Cure the Streets model. I want to make a couple points here. Cure the Streets comes out of the University of Chicago. It's been deployed in over 100 jurisdictions in the United States as well as abroad. It's been incredibly successful. successful in New York and Los Angeles. It's based on three very important interventions. Number one, hiring people who are credible messengers. And yes, that includes returning citizens. Second, identifying those individuals in the community who, frankly, are part of the problem, trying as best we can to engage them to stop the havoc, trying to connect them to services. And then thirdly and importantly, really helping the community stand up to say that violence in the community is not going to be tolerated. Where the Cure of the Streets model has been deployed, we've seen drops in gun violence from 20 to 60%.
Has it been deployed in Chicago? The irony is that if it's coming out of Chicago...
Well, don't be fooled on that, because a lot of people think that. Here's the deal. The data shows that in the sites where the Cure Violence model was deployed in Chicago, violence dropped. However, we know Illinois has budget issues. And so when Cure the Streets or Cure Violence in Illinois ceased being deployed, right in those sites where violence diminished, it went right back up. So we've got a track record already in the District of Columbia. It's about 6 months now. We're in two sites, one site in Ward 8, one site in Ward 5. I'm happy to report that there have been zero murders in those sites.
To Terrence's point, and I just – again, Terrence, thank you for calling, because you brought up a point that I was going to be bringing up. It seems to me that in this move from Superior Court to federal court, where you have longer, perhaps harsher sentences, that's almost going back. And you said yourself, as it relates to mass incarceration, the black community, not just in D.C., but anywhere in this country, is particularly sensitive to locking up, as Terrence suggested, black males for longer periods. Are we talking about trying to save those that may be, through these programs, that may be savable, but then there are others that you just wash your hands of because they're repeat offenders? Who are these people that you believe deserve longer sentences?
I mean, here's the deal. The community, our community, wants to be safe. They don't want little girls who are 10 years old or boys coming from school at the age of 15 getting shot up. Our community also does not want to see its own locked up forever. And so there has to be balance. I myself am troubled by the decision to prosecute cases in federal court. Okay? And I think Terrence's concern and others' concerns are valid. That's why we at the Office of Attorney General are trying to focus on other ways to prevent violence. In addition to Cure the Streets, in particular with respect to juvenile justice, you know, we have over the last 4 years diverted, not prosecuted, about 2,600 juveniles and instead provided them with the kinds of services that they need to get away from a life of violence. I'm happy to report, of those 2,600 kids we've diverted, 80% of those young people have not been rearrested. So there are other ways to approach crime.
Thank you, Terrence, so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dre, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dre. What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon. How is everybody today?
Doing just fine.
Doing good.
I'm fantastic. Now, I'm listening to this gentleman, and he talks about jobs. I personally, it's hard to come to grips because I personally got a lot of jobs for a lot of different, I would call them youngins out in these streets. There's not a whole lot of hoods left in D.C. Gentrification has purified this city so you don't have much to work with. And he's talking about he's got all of these people and no murders. Yo, the streets are dead. The youngins know this. You know what the new gang is? That yellow vest that you see these brothers wear every day to go to work at 6 a.m. That's the new gang. It's not hard for this guy to find people jobs. They are hiring. They are hiring left and right for everywhere. So I'm listening to him, and I'm like, come on, dog. What are you talking about? Who are you getting over on? What type of money? Who's giving you this money to do this?
Let me stop you for a minute because I'm not exactly sure I understand your point.
Okay, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I'm asking you because your point's not really clear, and I want to make sure that you're able to make your point clear.
Right. Yes. I got you. How many hoods are left in this city?
Let me ask you this. Are you saying that there are jobs for returning citizens, young guys who may be committing crimes?
Plenty of jobs for returning citizens. Even if you got a felony, and I am a witness to that. I am a felon.
Okay. So are you saying that is one of the more creative options for reducing crime in the city?
Gentrification has reduced crime in this city.
Interesting. What do you think about that, Mr. Racine?
You know, I hear where Dre's coming from, and I hear Dre as a hardworking person, perhaps looking to his left, looking to his right, wondering why people aren't doing what he's doing, which is applying himself and working hard. But the reality, Dre, notwithstanding gentrification, is that we have a homicide crisis in the District of Columbia. Look at the numbers. They're high. And the fact of the matter is there are a lot of young people and older people who need more direction, more discipline, and more focus. And they need more opportunity as well. And so these programs, that the Pathways programs that help train people for jobs that are there, are helpful. Cure the Streets that seeks to interrupt violence is helpful. And, I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree with him on the need for these programs.
Dre, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. To the issue, one of the points in the Cure the Streets program, we had a shooting earlier this week. Someone sprayed a bus stop. Four people shot, including a five-year-old girl. Thank God all of them are expected to recover. Not so much last week, where we had three people shot to death near Fort DuPont Park. Here's my question. How do you interrupt potentially violent conflicts by preventing retaliation and mediation, mediating simmering disputes? I'm reading your notes here. How could you have prevented those two shootings?
By no means am I saying that any program, including Cure the Streets, is going to prevent all shootings or all homicides. What I am saying is that when properly deployed in sites where there is extreme gun violence, there is no doubt that violence interrupters, like the Cure the Streets program, does reduce the amount of violence.
What does that deployment look like?
Here's what the deployment looks like. So you have two sites, as I mentioned, one in Ward 5, one in Ward 8. They are relatively small geographic locations where historically there's been a lot of violence. The men and women who are part of the Cure the Streets program are highly trained on mediation, de-escalation tactics, and they also have been trained on how to connect people to the kinds of services that are out there that might be an option other than committing crime.
Such as,
my goodness, there's job training, back to the old job training program. There are also programs that folks can get involved in and have the appropriate licenses, be it cosmetic licenses, barbershops, etc. When people get out there, like our Cure the Streets folks who are credible messengers, and they talk to folks who may be living in a life of crime, they have proven that they can be successful in getting these folks to look at another option. You talked about retaliation. One of the main problems that causes murders and violence is retaliations. The Cure the Streets professionals are out there right after a violent incident occurs, and guess what they're doing? They're talking people down from that retaliation.
You made an interesting point, something that I heard interesting from you. Living in a life of crime, would you say that, are we talking about gangs and crews versus issues that have come up that the mayor and Peter Newsom, the chief of police, have discussed about people not being able to address their differences peacefully. So this is going to, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to figure out what you're doing.
Okay.
And are you talking about crews and gangs when you're talking about this? Because the other people, that's random.
Sure, sure. There are still, you know, crews, and I wouldn't say gangs, but crews in the District of Columbia that have beefs. There are also, and we've not talked about this, there are guns galore in the District of Columbia, with ammunition galore in the District of Columbia. And when you combine guns and ammunition with petty disputes, you've got folks shooting each other for no good reason. And so what the Cure the Streets program is about having credible people go in there, talk to folks who they know, and try as best they can to get people to do something productive as opposed to violent and unproductive. And again, where this program has been deployed and deployed well, we have seen dramatic reductions in violence.
You spoke about guns. The mayor talks about guns. The chief of police talks about guns. That one could argue is almost a completely separate issue from this, in that, first of all, there are no manufacturers of guns in the District of Columbia.
Sure.
As you know, they come from Maryland. They come from Virginia.
And
outside areas. And so there's a market. So what, outside of prosecuting, outside of Cure the Streets, outside of Pathways, is there a thought process for addressing that area?
Yes. And I can tell you that the Office of Attorney General is working on and developing legal strategies to look at the gun dealers who are our neighbors in Maryland and Virginia. Do you know that apparently statistics show that 10% of crime guns, right? Excuse me, 90% of crime guns come from 10% of gun dealers. So there are gun dealers out there who can practice their trade in a lawful way, and there are gun dealers out there in different states and neighboring jurisdictions who are reckless in how they practice, and they literally flood our streets with illegal guns. So yes, the Office of Attorney General is serious and focused in developing legal strategies to go after those careless and reckless gun dealers.
I'm curious about something. I don't know if you're able to answer this question, but compared to violent crime sentencing during the 1980s compared to now, is the sentencing, in your opinion, more lenient or less lenient?
It's a good question. I think it's clear that in the 80s and 90s, there was a ramp up of prosecution and a ramp up in harsh sentences with a lot of mandatory minimum sentences. These days, there's been greater enlightenment, in my view, where there is much more fair sentencing that doesn't destroy communities and have folks, you know, hauled away and warehoused for the majority of their lives.
There's can you talk about youth rehabilitation? Because I think the reality of this is that if we're not careful and we don't guide young people, young criminals will become older criminals.
That's it.
And some older violent criminals may become dead violent criminals. So talk to me about that in these last few minutes.
Sure. And thank you for giving me that opportunity, because juvenile justice is what the Office of Attorney General is all about. The office is the exclusive prosecutor of juveniles in the District of Columbia. And that's why we've sought to be as innovative as possible. And here's what we've learned. We've learned that young people in particular communities where there is a lot of violence suffer from trauma. Trauma from being the victims of violence, trauma from witnessing violence, trauma from having family members and friends shot up. When young people are in a state of trauma, guess what? They do not do well in school. They can't sit still. They're impulsive. They're anxious. And what happens then? They make poor decisions. That's why in our juvenile justice arena, we focus on treating the trauma. Remember I mentioned the diversion program? The diversion program is a trauma assessment and a trauma services reduction program. That's why those numbers I repeated, 80% of that 2,600 kids who we've put in programs that specifically treat the underlying trauma have not recidivated, have not been rearrested. That's where it's at. We need to also go at the trauma that is crushing our community.
I only have about a minute or so left before this break. We've spoken about, obviously, the U.S. attorney and the mayor's office and police. But from your perspective, in the communities, who are or who would you like to see as your biggest allies?
Well, this is it's a great question. I think the community really needs to step up and be its best ally.
But who in the community?
Oh, my goodness. There are mothers. There are fathers. There are grandfathers. There are uncles. There are young leaders in the community who are actually trying as best they can to make violence abnormal. We cannot accept this as normal. And when the community gets together and makes the decision that it's not going to tolerate violence, that it's going to be focused on reducing the trauma that some of these young people are going through, then we have a chance to live in a much more safe and healthy community.
Carl Racine, the Attorney General for the District of Columbia, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. We appreciate it, and certainly and sincerely, good luck, because as you said in the beginning, this is a crisis, and while we are not where we were back in the 80s, we don't need to see more blood in the street. So I thank you so much.
Thank you, Harold.
Going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Harold Fisher. We just want to remind you that we will continue to monitor the political crisis in Virginia over the course of the weekend. And of course, we will bring you any updates of or major developments as they happen. So just again, a reminder that those bits of information will be coming to you during the course of the weekend, if warranted. Also, tonight's broadcast can be heard via podcast on WHUR.com after 9 o'clock. We do that every day, Monday through Friday, for any of the programs that you hear. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, February 8th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.